So we are holding on pay test on the days at the Mishnah near the bottom. Continuing on the topic of, so we started at the end of the seventh parak talking about where if a person carries something out on Shabbos, there has to be, it has to be that the object that he's carrying has some kind of significance, something for which a person would keep it because he needs it or whatever. Not, for example, we said something that's also bahana or something that's disgusting that people wouldn't keep. It has to have a minimum shear. And we went through at the end of the seventh parak and throughout the eighth parak, the shiurim of various things, how much of a person carries them on Shabbos is chayav chatas. Then we digress. The first half of our parak, all the Mishnayos up until this point, we're digressing to talk about different dinim where we have an asmachta from psukim for them. Now we're getting back to that topic, if you don't mind muting yourself. Now we're getting back to that topic of things that a person carries on Shabbos and how much he's chayav for. So the Mishnah says, Hamotzi eitzim, if a person carries out wood on Shabbos, then the shiris kedei levashal beis hakala is if it's enough to cook an easy egg, which we learned previously on daf pei, that means a chicken egg, because those are easier to cook than other kinds of eggs. It means actually not the whole egg, it means only a gregeris of it, the size of a dried fig, because in general when it comes to isurim on Shabbos involving food, that's the shir. And it means we said over there that you have it's mixed together with oil, it is beaten together with oil before it's cooked to make it easier to cook, and it's put in a pan or a pot or whatever. So if you have enough wood to be able to cook it, then once all those things have been done, then that would be the amount of wood that a person is chayav for carrying on Shabbos. Any less than that, it's still also, but he wouldn't be chayav chatas. Tavlin, if a person carries out spices on Shabbos, then the shiris kedei l'tavol beit hakala. Similar idea would be if it's enough spices in order to spice a beit hakala. The same thing, this scrambled egg or whatever that we just said that you're cooking, you want to put some spices into it. So if you have enough spices over there, that it would be sufficient to spice that egg, the whole thing, then that's the amount to be chayav.
It's very little.
Well, it's not very much, that's true.
The big size of an egg.
Well, we said the egg itself would be the bit of the egg itself would be the size of a dried fig. Right, so you don't need very much spices to spice that is true. But nevertheless, it means, in other words, let's say a person carries out, one or two grains of garlic powder or onion powder or whatever, then yeah. The various kinds of spices combined together, because functionally they all have the same kind of purpose, which is to give the food a flavor, as we'll see in the Gemara. Okay.
So it seems to be eichus, not kamas.
Pretty much, yeah. That's exactly, yeah. It's the quality of it, not the... Well, I mean, it is. You need a quantity, but the point is if you have a grain or two of onion powder and a grain or two of garlic powder and a grain or two of pepper, let's say, then that if it's enough that between all of them, that'll give enough of a flavor to the egg, then the person will be chayav for all of that. Flipe agorizin, what about now you have nutshells? Now, we don't mean the kind of nutshells like when we buy nuts from the store and we crack them. We're talking about when the nut is growing on the walnut, for example, is growing on the tree, you have a soft shell that grows, a soft greenish shell that grows on the outside of it. And that shell is useful. You can make dye out of it. You can make dye out of that shell because it has this green color. So those, or klipe rimonim, or pomegranate rind, same thing. They're red, so you can use them to make a red dye. Iskis or pua, which are various kinds of herbs. Iskis or pua, which are various kinds of herbs or grasses or whatever that are used to make dyes. And the Rashi translates them with two French words, which on the side of it here it says one of them is a blue dye and the other one is a red dye. Whatever it is, the point is, for those kinds of things, so all of those, how much would a person be chayav for carrying those on Shabbos? Could it be boya behen beged cotton piece svacha? If enough of them to dye the little piece of cloth that's put on the top of a svacha. So a svacha is a woman's turban or hat or something. Svacha literally means like a network, because it was made out of kind of like a mesh, sort of like some of the snuds that you have nowadays, which have a mesh, and then underneath them they have a lot.
Where are we? I'm sorry.
We're on pay test on the days in the middle of Mishnah.
Yeah. The middle of the Mishnah.
Middle of the Mishnah. That's eight lines from the bottom. Yeah. So like this, you have this zvacha, you have this hat or snur or whatever you want to call it that women would wear. And it was a common thing that on the top of it, they would put a little piece of cloth for decoration. So if there's enough of these dye materials, these raw dye materials, to be able to make enough dye to dye that, then the person will be chayav. You have different gersoys over here in the Mishnayos, by the way. Instead of pisvacha, there's a different gers, the bag of cotton pisvacha, a small garment like the size of a vacha. Whatever. Okay. Another din, meiraglayim nested or boris k'muli of eshlag. If a person carries out on Shabbos any of the following five things, meiraglayim, which is urine, or, and we're going to see in the Gemara that all of them, we're going to see in the Mishnah and in the Gemara that all of them can be used to clean things, all of them can be used and were used in those days as detergents. So that's meiraglayim. Neser is a type of mineral. It's something like sodium carbonate, calcium carbonate, baking soda, something like that. There's different kinds, as we'll see in the Gemara. Uberis literally means soap. So either it means some kind of plant from which you can, it means some kind of plant from which you can produce soap is the usual explanation of it. Tmulia, we'll see in the Gemara what that is. Basically, it's Rashi actually is going to say in the Gemara that he doesn't know what it is, but we'll talk about it over there. The Eshlag, and Eshlag, which we'll see in the Gemara what it is, all of them, Kedelachabas Beged Cotton Piece Vacha. So all of those are similar to the dye stuff. If you have enough of them to wash that little cloth that goes on top of the Svacha, then that's enough for a person to be chayiv for carrying on Shabbos. Rav Yehuda Omer Kedelachaber Atakesim. Rav Yehuda says, and as usual, as we've learned before, Rav Yehuda's shear is smaller than the Chachamim. He says if it's the amount in order to remove a stain of Gam Nida. Now you have the Mishnah in Mishnah in Masechta Nida tells us that if you have a stain which you're not sure is Dam Nida or dye, or for that matter, if you have a stain which you know is Dam Nida and you want to get it off the clothes so you can tovel it and make them tahor, then you have seven materials, seven chemicals that you put on the stain and rub them in to see if that will get rid of it. If they don't get rid of it, you know it's dye. So two of them aren't mentioned in our Mishnah because the two of them involve saliva. So, I mean, the same din would apply to Pashtus, but the Mishnah is not mentioning it because you don't keep saliva for any length of time, so it's not Dabra Kosha Latnia. But these other five things, the Meiraglayim, et cetera, are the last five in that list, and all of them, a person might keep them around for this purpose. So the Yehuda says that's enough to make him chayav. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tanena Chodazimna. Why does the Mishnah need to tell us that if you take out wood on Shabbos and you chayev the amount in order to be able to cook an egg? We already learned that previously. We learned in the previous perek, konek de lachas kulmos, that if a person carries out a reed on Shabbos, then he's chayev if it's large enough to make a kulmos, to make a pen for writing out of. Adayim as a sardim used for writing sefer Torah, quill and mezuzahs, use a quill, use a pen made out of a reed, whereas Ashkenazi sardim use a quill. A quill is a feather of a bird. But sardim use a reed from a plant of some kind. So the Mishnah had said over there that if you carry out a reed on Shabbos, if it's large enough to make a pen, then you chayev for that. Imahoya of Omerusas, but if this reed was too thick to make a pen out of, or if it was cracked and you can't make a pen out of it, then Kedei Levashel Beis HaKalasher Beis. And then we said the shear is, if there's enough of it to be able to cook the easiest of eggs, which we said means a chicken egg, Trufo Nasuno Be'ilpas, mixed up with oil and placed in a pan. So we see already that the things that are used for cooking, the shear for them, is if it's enough to cook an egg. Why does our mission need to repeat that? The answer is because Mao Detema, otherwise you would have thought like this. Hasam who would like cause you the midi. The difference is because when it comes to a reed, if it's too thick or it's cracked, there's tacky nothing else you can use it for other than firewood. Aval Asin, but when it comes to wood, there is something else you could use wood for, a smaller amount. You could use wood to make a tooth of a key. We had previously, also in the 8th parak, we talked about, we had keys in those days, locks that had keys or locks or whatever that had removable teeth, not removable really, but that had teeth that were attached to the lock, and then you use the key to turn them. So the same thing, we talked over there about the teeth are usually made out of bone, but you could make them out of wood as well. So you would think, therefore, that would be enough. So a person carries out an amount of wood on Shabbos enough to make a tooth of a key, the tooth of a lock, whatever, then that should make that should be enough to be mechayim. So afkilo kol shehu, so there would be a much smaller, a very tiny amount. Kamash malon. Therefore, the Mishnah tells us that no, because we had the general rule that we learned at the beginning of the 8th Perek that Abaya said, when you have two uses of something and one of them is more common and the other one is less common, then you go according to the more common use, even if that results in a kula. So it is over here. Even though it is possible to use wood to make the teeth of a key or the teeth of a lock, nevertheless, that's not the more common use for wood is to use it for firewood. Therefore, the shear goes according to that, even though it comes out being a larger shear, even though that ends up being a kula. We said tavlin could give a tabl betakala. We said that when it comes to spices, the shear is if it's enough to spice a betakala. And we said that the various kinds of spices combine together for that purpose. The Gemara says, I have a contradiction. What do you mean that that the spices always combine? We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Orla, tavlin, when it comes to spices, shnayim begimel shemus, when you have two or three different names, mimin echad, of one species, meaning, so Rashi says, beis v'gimel shemus, means, let's say, for example, among peppers, now, not the kind of peppers that we have, like hot peppers and bell peppers and whatever, those they didn't have in the time of the Gemara, but we're talking about, for example, pepper forms. So you have, for example, the little ones that you grind up to make the spice pepper. So you have, for example, this white pepper, this black pepper, this long peppers. So you have different kinds. They're all called pepper, but they're all subspecies or subvarieties or whatever of pepper. Because they're mimin echad, because they're from one species, or mishlosha minin v'shem echad, or they're three different species, but they all have one name. Now, Tosfos has a different understanding of shemos over here, that shemos means different isurim. So Tosfos says that, let's say, shnayim v'gimel shemos mimin echad means, let's say, it's all pepper, but some of it is also because of orla, because pepper corns grow on a tree, so they're subject to orla, and some of them because of chalayakarim, let's say, and some of them because of some other, so let's say, chalayakarim, asherah, and irinidachas, Tosfos says, would be an example of three shemos. Or three minim b'shem echad, or you have three different types of spices, but they're all the same issue. Let's say they're all kalayakarim. If you don't mind muting yourself, someone has a background noise by them. Either way, the Mishnah says asurim, they are asur, umitzayfim zeimzeh, and they combine one with another. Tosfos gets into a long discussion of what that means exactly. What does it mean asurim umitzayfim? Does it mean that they after the pot that they were put into it, and they combine together to make a person chayav malchus for eating a kezias total across all of them, even if they're different types, even if they're different varieties of pepper or different isurim or whatever. Tosfos gets into a long discussion. Does it mean that? Or maybe what it means is they both combine together. Asurim and stavim is not really two separate statements. It's saying they combine together to after the pot. Or it means, he talks about, that it means that they combine together, that they're also, even if they were mixed together dry, yavish to yavish, where usually you have one of them might be mevatel, the other one if there's rois, whatever. Anyway, the point is, the Chizkiyah says that din in that Mishnah in Orla does not apply to all kinds of spices, only the mine mesika shanu. We're only talking about the kinds of spices that are used to sweeten the pot. Precisely that, hoilur or imamatic kadera, because you can combine them all together and use them to sweeten and to give a good flavor to a pot of food. So, time of the chazul imamatic kadera, implying that we're only talking about when the spices combine, since they all have the same basic purpose, is when they're all useful together in order to give the food a good taste. Implying, but if we were talking about the kind of spices that don't do that, we were talking about the kind of spices where you have spices where you put in more for the flavor of the spice itself rather than for the effect that it has on the food. So it sounds like if it's the kind of spices where each one has an independent flavor and you put them in for their own sake, then they wouldn't combine. So why is our Mishnah saying that they combine regardless? And the answer is hochinami chosulamatic. You know what? As a matter of fact, our Mishnah is also talking about the kinds that are meant to sweeten the pot. Not the kind that I meant for independent flavors. The kind that I meant for independent flavors of their own. The pastures, those would be like other kinds of food, which we learned previously. The amount is a good guess. But where they're used, where they all have the same basic purpose, like you're, it doesn't matter so much. For example, when you're seasoning a pot, let's say whether you're putting in black pepper or white pepper or long pepper or whatever, they all taste basically the same. And you're putting them in not so much in order to taste the pepper. You're putting them in order to bring out the flavor of the food that you're cooking with it. Then they would combine together as a thing in our Mishnah.
That obviously doesn't make it sweet.
No, it doesn't mean to make it sweet. It means to make it a good flavor, to give it a good flavor, to bring out the flavors of the food that's there. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, klipei agorizim or klipei rimonim. We mentioned that when you have a bunch of different dye stuffs, the outer shell of a nut, the shell of a pomegranate, sisupura, these various herbs that are used for dyeing. Then we said today, let's boil up bagged cotton. There's the shear that a person is high of his when it's large enough in order to dye the small cloth at the top of a slacha. So the Gemara says, Rumini, I have a contradiction. What do you mean that a person is chayav only for that larger amount? We learn in a braisa that we learned previously in the previous credit. Hamotzi samonim shuyim. If a person carries out on Shabbos dyes that have already been soaked and already are ready to be used as dyes, then the shiur is chayav is kedelis boya ben dugma le'ira. Then the amount is chayav if there's enough of it in it to dye a dugma for an era. So we explained over there that what it means is a dugma means a sample. So like a dye merchant dyes small pieces of cloth and uses them as samples, sort of like nowadays when you go to a paint store and they have the various little things over there for you to see what color paint you want. So in those times you would have a dyer would do something similar. You would dye little pieces of cloth and keep them around a sample so you could order by him, I want a piece of cloth dyed such and such a color. But that's dugma, so it's a much smaller piece than the one that goes on top of the slacha. And ira, we explained over there also, Rashi explained like this, means you have, when you're weaving, so you have the loom is set up, you have the sheffy threads are stretched across the length of the loom and going through the loops over there, then you're going to be lifting up one foot, you're going to be lifting up one frame and with it go half the threads, and then you're going to pass the eighth of thread through, and then you're going to put that one down and pick up the other one and pass it through the other way, and that's how the cloth gets woven, going back and forth. What you actually do is instead of holding, you have the eighth of thread is wound around a spool, and it's placed within something called an era. In English, it's called a shuttle. And what you do is, instead of just holding it and passing it back and forth, which would take a long time, instead what you do is you throw it back and forth between the two layers of thread. So you pick up one half of the thread with one frame, and you throw the era with the, you have the era has a small hole in it for the thread to come out, but you want something, and you throw it, and then the thread starts unwinding from the spool inside and going across into the cloth that you're weaving. Then you put down that one, pick up the other one, throw it in the other direction, and more thread comes out. You need something to keep the thread from completely unwinding out of the era. So what you do is you take a little piece of cloth and you stick it into the end of the shuttle, so that all you have is a small hole for the thread to come out and it doesn't just get on the end of unwinding and falling all over the place. So that small piece of cloth is called an era, and that is the same size as the dugma, the same size. That's the same size as the dyer would use as samples for his prospective customers. Anyway, that's much smaller than the bagged cotton piece, Vacha. So what are you telling me over there? So what are you telling me in our Mishnah then, that you're only chayev with these dyed stuffs that we mentioned in the Mishnah? If you have the amount in order to dye the bagged cotton piece, if we see that there you're chayev for a much smaller amount, and the answer is ha itmar Allah, you know that there was said over there in that Gemara, Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Barabua, Lefish ein Adam Tereach Lishris, Samanim Lusbaya Behem Dugma Le'ira. Because when it comes to first soaking and preparing the dye stuff, the person is not going to bother doing that when all he needs it for is for a dugma or an era. So if a person has, let's say, any of the materials mentioned in our Mishnah, like the nutshells, he's not the skin, whatever, the membrane over there over the nut, he's not going to collect enough of that, and then just, he's not going to collect a tiny amount of that and go through all the process of soaking it and making it into dye just in order to dye a dugma or in order to dye an era. He'll wait until he has some other project that he needs to do for which he needs a larger amount of dye, and then he'll take a small amount of it and use it for a dugma and use it for an era, whatever, and then use the rest of it for some other project. As opposed to once it's already soaked, once it's already prepared and made into dye that he can just dip thread into and dye it, Then already he might keep a smaller amount. So that's the braisa that we quoted is referring to that case where they're already made into dye, then a smaller amount is still considered significant to it because he can still keep it. He has it left over from some other project. He can now use it for a dugma or for an era, as opposed to our missionaries talking about the raw materials that are going to be made into dye stuff where then you need a larger amount, so he's not going to bother making dye out of them when he has a small quantity in the first place.
Once again, for the cousins in it.
So that's the svacha. That's the piece svacha. The ira, we said, is that to close up the end of the shuttle that you're using for weaving. So it's a smaller amount.
That's
it is. It's a piece of cloth, but it is a piece of cloth. It doesn't necessarily have to be dyed. But the reason why we're mentioning it is because the real thing is dugma. The real shear in that case is the one that the dyer uses as his sample to be able to show his customers. But what it is not everybody is familiar with how large that is. Unless you go to a dyer, you're not going to be familiar with that. But everybody in those days wove, or everybody knew somebody who wove. So an era is just something more practical. That's it. You know, it'd be like nowadays. You know, you say, you know, you mention the size of something, and you know nobody knows what it is, and you say it's the size. You say it's the size of an iPhone, and then you know people understand what that means. So you compare it to something else that they're familiar with. You know. Okay.
Are you chayav for both shiurim?
So it depends. That's what we're saying. If you're talking about, for example, the person is taking out the raw nutshells, then he's only chayav if it's a larger amount where you could make enough dye out of that to dye the beged cotton piece of the little cloth on top of the woman's hat. As opposed to if it's already previously soaked and you just have a little bit of it and you use most of it and you have a little bit of it left, then the person is chayav for the smaller shear, which is if it's the amount to dye the dugma. So just the sample that he's going to use to show his customers, yeah. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah Meiraglayim, we said that a person is chayav for carrying a certain amount of urine. We said in the Mishnah, we have the Tanakama and said if it's enough to be able to wash the beged cotton kisvacha, to use a detergent. And Rabbi Huda said if it's enough to remove a ketem, a blood stain. So Tana, we learn in the Braisa, Meiraglayim ad ben mem yoyim. The Meiraglayim are up to 40 days. So what does that mean? Does it mean that it's only from a baby up to 40 days old? So it just says that's not what it means. What it means is it's effective, Tosfos explains, only between 3 days and 40 days old. 3 days old that hasn't yet fermented, and more than 40 days old already, potency is weakened. So ad ben memyon, up until 40 days, it's useful for this purpose. After that, it's not. Then we said that nether. We said another material that a person that they can use as a detergent is nether. So there were two kinds in those days. Tana nether Alexandris, vola nether Anpantrin. So the kind that comes from Alexandria, not the kind that comes from Anpantrin. Antiphras is the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. But Pashtus, what it is if you look it up, for example, you have the two very similar compounds. One's called niter and the other one's called natron. They're both mixtures of sodium or calcium or whatever with something else. They were apparently similar enough that people could easily confuse them, but they're still chemically different. And we're talking about the one kind, not the other kind, because the one kind is more like baking soda, so it's stronger than the other. Whatever it is. Then we said burdus. We said in the Mishnah that a person is chayav for carrying burdus on Shabbos. So what is burdus? Amar Rav Yehuda zechol. It means sand. Now, we learned previously, Tosfos points out, that sand, you have a different shear. The amount of sand that you would mix with plaster to be able to plaster in order to give the plaster some body. But that, Tosfos says, there's two different grades of sand. You have a coarser sand that you use in plaster, and then you have a finer sand that you can use for washing clothing. Tosfos brings a different use over here, that not choil, but rather ahol or ahala, which as we're going to talk soon, is some kind of aloe or some kind of plant similar to that. Okay. So the question is, v'hatanya ha-burdus v'ha-choil. We learn in a braisa of burdus and choil, implying that they're two separate things. Ella, my burdus kavrisa. So no, let's say instead that burdus is kavrisa, which Rashi says is sulfur. Rashi says it's sulfur, although the Ramban seems to say that it's a root of some kind of plant. Whatever it is, Mesa, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Because we learn in a braisa, hosifu alehen. Now, you have those various kinds of plant. You have various classifications of plants as far as the dinim of Shemitah. The dinim of Shemitah apply to things that grow from the ground, but you have different kinds. You have different kinds of plants where the dinim of Shemitah apply differently to them. Some of them because they're always hefker, for example. Some of them because they're constantly available, and you can't say that there's any time when they're gone from the field that you should have to do beer. So Braisa says, "Hosifu alehen." The Chachamim added a few other kinds of plants to which the dinim of Shemitah apply, even though you wouldn't think it's obvious that it does. Hachalvisin, Rashi translates it by a French word, which means dandelion. But even though dandelions, you don't normally eat them, but they do have edible parts. You could, in fact, eat the leaves if you wanted to. In fact, they have. You can find them. You can find them in health food stores or whatever. I think they sell them for salads. So the dinim of Shemitah apply to them. Bahalinun and wormwood, which is a type of bitter herb. Bahaburis va'al. And burdus and ahal. Now, the isak data kavrisa, if you're going to tell me now that kavrisa is sulfur, so it's not a plant bechlau, so shmita shouldn't apply to it. Kavrisa mi isa b'shiyas, is sulfur, which is a mineral, or the dinim of shmita relevant to it? V'hatnan, or v'hatanyu, it's a b'raisa, zehachlau, the general rule is like this, kol shiyesh le iko yesh le shiyas, anything that has a root, in the ground has a dinim of shmiyas. The she'en le'ikur ein le'shmiyas. If it has no root in the ground, like sulfur, which is a mineral, it's not something that grows from a root, then ein le'shmiyas, then the dinim of shmiyas don't apply to it. But why should shmiyas apply to sulfur? According to the Ramban's explanation that we're talking about, that kavrisa is some kind of plant root, then the question is, it itself is the root. So the dinim of shmita don't apply to it necessarily in the same way as they do to other things. The dinim of shmiyas don't apply to a root that constantly stays in the ground, because it's never gone, and therefore the dinim of beer in particular don't apply to it. Here when we're saying that the Chachamim added that burdus and ahol, that the dinim of shmita apply to them, it means for everything. It means also as far as the dinim of beer. So how can that be if it's a root that's in the ground? So you can't say that burdus is kavrisa. Ela, my burdus ahola. So no, we're going to say that burdus is ohala, which is aloe. So the question is, v'altanya burdus v'ohala. We just, in the braisa, we just quoted, we mentioned burdus and ohal separately. And the answer is, ela tre gavni ohala. There are two types of plant called ohala. One of them is identical with the burdus of our Mishnah, and the other one is a different plant. So according to Tosfos, it might be that now the Gemara is going back to its initial assumption. We started according to that Girsa, which we don't have in front of us, that Burdus Ze'ohol instead of Chol, and then we went back and forth and concluded that after all it is Ohola, it's one of the two types of Ohola. According to the other, the Gemara is now changing. It started by saying it's sand, then it tried by saying it's Kavrisa, which is sulfur, and now it's saying that it's Ohola, which is aloe. So when we say Shrei Gavne Olo, there's a few different kinds of plants from which you can get soap material. There's aloe, there's ice plant, another one is called. There's a few different kinds of plants that have soap wort, and a few different other kinds of plants that have soap in their name. So all of them have this in common that you can extract from them material that you can use as a detergent. And they did in those days. Then we said in the Mishnah, kimulya, another kind of detergent is kimulya. So what is that? Amar Rav Yehuda, shloif dutz. So Rav Yehuda says, in Aramaic it's called shloif dutz. Shloif dutz literally means pull out and stick in. So Rashi says, I have no idea what it is. The Rambam says that it's the ashes of a certain plant, which is called in Arabic alkali. So actually, you have in chemistry nowadays, you have things that are acid and things that are alkaline, and there's a certain kind of plant called alkali, which is when you burn it or whatever, the ashes of it are useful as a detergent. That's a very strong cleaning agent, and from that they get the whole concept of things that are alkaline, things that are the opposite of acid, basically, like very strong things like oven cleaner and drain cleaner and drain opener and all those sorts of things are alkali. So they all come from that word. So the coincidence of that, that's what we're talking about, the ashes of that plant, which are useful as a cleaning agent. Okay. Eshlog. Then we have the last one in the Mishnah was Eshlog. So Shmuel says, I asked all of the people who go to the sea, all the sailors, because apparently they didn't know what it was, where Shmuel lived, so he had to ask people who travel abroad, do you have any idea what it is? But Omruli, and they told me, Shunana Shmei, the name of it in Aramaic is Shunana. You can find it in the halls of pearls, or Maskile, Beramsa, the Parazala, and you get it out using a long iron nail. So it could be some kind of extract from the inside of the oyster shell. It could be something that's extracted from the ocean bed where you find pearls, whatever it is. It's not really clear from the description what it is exactly. In modern Hebrew, they use the word eshlag to mean a mineral called potash, which is the source of potassium. So, but lav dafka, that's not lav dafka, that's the material the Gemara means, though. Okay. All right, continues the Mishnah. Pilpelas kolshu. Now we're going to talk about several things where if a person carries them on Shabbos, then there's no minimum shiur. Even the smallest amount he carries, he's chayev because it has a use. So pilpelas kolshu, if a person carries pilpelas, then he's chayev for even a tiny amount. Now Rashi says it's not the same as the pilpel. It's not the same as the pepper that we have. So it's not the same as the black pepper or white pepper or whatever that we were talking about in the previous Mishnah, which is a spice that's used to flavor, that's used to flavor your dish when you're cooking. And there we said there is a minimum shiur. Here we're talking about a different but related species. The itron kolshu, also if a person carries itron on Shabbos, he's chayav for any amount. Itron is something like turpentine or kerosene or something. Rashi explains earlier in the Masechta when we talked about it in connection with the question whether you can use it for Shabbos candles. So Rashi explained that what it is you heat up pitch that you get from trees and you have a clear liquid comes out of it called itron. So it's something like turpentine or something related to that. Anyway, so, and even a tiny amount of that, a person is chayav, and we'll see in the Gemara what a small amount of pilpelas or itron is useful for. Next, mined samim, different kinds of spices, and here we're not talking about spices that are used for food, here we're talking about the kind that are used for fragrance. So those, or mined matchas, or any pieces of metal, kol shehen, then even a small amount, a person is chayav, as we'll see in the Gemara why. Also, me'avne ha-mizbeach, if a person carries out on Shabbos even a small piece of the stones of the mizbeach, so let's say a piece chipped off the mizbeach, and a person has it by him, so if he carries that out on Shabbos, he'd be chayev, or me'afar ha-mizbeach, or dust that rubbed off the mizbeach, which, as we're going to say in a minute, these things need to be put in gniza, because they have kedusha, mekek sfarim, or if you have the rotted away remnants of sfarim, so Rashi described, as we're going to see in the Gemara, mekek is actually the name of a worm that eats sfarim, like bookworms, a silverfish or whatever, and what they leave over after they ate is called mekek. What we're describing over here is mekek. It's like the crumbled up, the rotted away remnants that they leave over here. So those, or the same thing when it comes to the cloths that are used, the mantles or whatever that are used to cover the sfarim, the same idea. Kol shehu, so all of those four things, also a person is chayev for carrying a kol shehu of them, shematzniyin oisim magonzim, because all of those things, a person puts them aside in order to put them in the gniza. Because all these things have kedusha, they all have to be put in gniza, so therefore a person will keep even a tiny amount of them, and he'll take out even a tiny amount of them in order to put it in gniza, in order to be mekayim that mitzvah, and therefore he's chayev on Shabbos for doing that. Rabbi Yehuda says, here's another one, ahamotzi misham shabbat azara kol shehu, also somebody who carries out even a tiny things, of thing, or even a tiny amount of things that were used to worship avad azara, is chayev. Things of Avodah Zarah are also banah. So what? It's not considered kosher lasniyah. But no, shenemar v'lo yidbak b'yadcha ma'umah min acherim. The pasuk says there should not be left. There should not stick to your hands anything from the banned substance. Meaning anything of Avodah Zarah is also for a yid to have. So therefore, we see that the Torah considers it kosher, even a tiny amount of it has an iser on it. So now, we learned at the end, Rashi points out, we learned at the end of the seventh parak, when we started talking about these dinim, that in order to be chayef carrying something on Shabbos, it has to be kol ha-kosher lasniyah. It has to be something which is suitable to put aside because a person would keep it so he can get use out of it or something. Here he can't, because it's also banah. Rabbi Yehuda, Rashi says, would disagree with that concept. He would say, even if it's not kosher lasniyah, so he would say, we had actually two definitions in the Gemara over there of ainah kosher lasniyah. One was that it was something disgusting, like dam nida, and the other one is that it was something also, like avodah zarah. So the Jehoda would disagree on that one. He might agree that dam nida, a person tackle, would be possible for carrying because there's no use in keeping it around, although we said over there maybe you could because you could feed it to a cat. But so yeah. Anyway. Tosfos later on, in the next parak, discusses a different angle on it, which is, We know that, now on the face of it, so if the person is taking out the Misham Shabbat Azara, so he's taking it out because he doesn't want it in his house, isn't that classic Malacha She'en Tzricha L'Gufa? Why should he be Chayim? And the answer is, throughout the Masechta we've been saying so far, and we're actually going to talk about it soon on Daf Tzadik Daled, that Rabbi Yehuda holds Malacha She'en Etzricha L'Gufa, a person is Chayav for. So even if a person is doing a Malacha, not because he's not doing it for the purpose that they did it in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, they carried things because they needed something which was in point A, and they carried it to point B. For example, they carried it to the workers in order to make things for the Mishkan or whatever. Over here, he's not. He's not taking it out in order to make anything of it. He's taking it out in order to get it out of his house. That's called Malacha. That's the Tosfos definition of Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. We'll talk over there. We've talked before. We'll talk again over there about Rashi's and other Rishonim's definitions of Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. Whatever the case, in this case, it is that. So why is he chayev? Rabbi Yehuda Taka holds Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, a person is chayev. So there you go. That's why he says in our Mishnah that you chayev. Other Rishonim say not necessarily. They say that maybe even in this case, because you can have the person is carrying it out in order to fulfill the mitzvah of besuring it. He's not just carrying it out in order to throw it out of his house. He's actually going to carry it to the Yarmulke, or he's going to carry it to some place where he can throw it in a fire or whatever, and then he's actually doing it l'gufa because he's doing it for the purpose of being mekayim a mitzvah instead of besuring it.
What's the halacha on this point?
The halacha is that malacha shein etzricha l'gufa. So you actually have, I think we've discussed before that you have a machlokas of the Rambam and the other Rishonim on that question of whether malacha shein etzricha l'gufa is chayiv. The Rambam learns, if I recall correctly, that it's chayiv, and the other and everybody else learns that it's potter, like Reb Shimon. But let's rediscuss that when we get back to that topic of Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa on Daf Tzadik Daled, Daf Tzadik Gimel Tzadik Daled, we'll talk further about it.
And Matkis calls Shehen because it's Mitzdarif?
Which one?
Matkis, the metal.
The Matkis, we're going to see in the Gemara what a tiny piece of metal will be useful for. Well,
okay.
We'll get to that in a minute. So the Gemara starts off, Pilpelis Kol Shehu L'Mayim Chalya, what would you use a tiny piece of Pilpelis for? And the answer is, L'Reya HaPeh, if a person has bad breath, they would put a little piece of Pilpelis in their mouth, and it would help take that away. It would help mask it, at least. Itzron Kol Shehu, we said a tiny amount of Itzron, of turpentine or whatever, what is that good for L'Mayim Chalya? What's Silchsa? That's good if a person has a migraine headache. So they take a little bit of Itzron, and it cures it. I don't know if that works nowadays. Don't try this at home, but yeah. We said minib samim kol shehen. We said if a person carries out a tiny amount of fragrances, then he's chayev because a tiny amount of fragrance is useful. So turn around, we learn in a braise in this connection. Hamotzi reyach ra kol shehu. If a person takes out something of his house that has a bad smell, then also kol shehu. Now it's not because he wants the bad smell out of his house. Rashi says when we say something of a bad smell, we mean something that has a strong smell that, for example, you burn it. Rashi gives an example of something called chiltis, which we're going to talk about in more detail later on in the Masechta. It's an herb that has a powerful smell and a powerful taste, a bit of an unpleasant smell or taste, but you use it, for example, you use it for, you burn it and make smoke of it to chase away mazikin, which could mean shadim. Rashi says mazikin, it could mean shadim, or it could mean more down to earth, various kinds of bugs or whatever that don't like the smell any more than people do. So whatever it is, even a small amount of that is useful for that purpose, to get as a mazikin repellent. Yeah. Shemen Tov Kol Shehu, also if a person carries on Shabbos good fragrant oil, meaning oil that was mixed with or cooked with various kinds of spices to give it a fragrance, like the Shemen HaMishnah, then even a tiny amount of that, because again, it's like the fragrances of our Mishnah, even a tiny amount of it is good stuff to have around. Argaman Kol Shehu, also if a person carries out on Shabbos purple dye, then he's chayev. Now, why should dye be any different than anything else? Rashi says that Rashi says because apparently it also has a fragrance. Apparently, it has its double use. Unlike, let's say, for example, the dyes that we mentioned in the previous Mishnah or various other kinds of dyes, where the only purpose of them is dye cloth. Here, you have argaman as a double use. Once you can dye cloth with it, purple, but you can also before that you can keep it around because it smells the fragrance. So then, a person would be chayev for that. And also, if a person carries out on Shabbos one single b'sula tavered, then he's chayim. What is b'sula tavered? Rashi says, avered is a rose. Rashi says it means a leaf or a petal from one small, from one young rose. So even though the rose is young, even though the petal is small, he's still chayim. On the side of it here, it brings a couple of other explanations from the Aruch. One is that Besula Tavered means a rose that's still closed up. Like, yeah, you go to the flower stores, the roses you find that are closed up, and then you put them in water for a couple of days, and they open up. So it means that it's called Besula Saveret, because like a Besula that's closed up, so is this road. Or he also brings from Rabbi Haigoin that the word is not Besula Saveret, but Psila Saveret, which means a thread of Vered. So it means a thread, it means a cotton thread that's colored pink, the color of a rose. So then if a person carries out one such thread on Shabbos, then he's chayev because it's a thing that people keep around. As they use it for decoration. Okay. We said, Mine Matris Kol Shehen. We said if a person carries out a tiny amount of metal, on any kind of metal, then he's chayev. Lamai calls it, what would you use a tiny piece of metal for? Tanya, Rav Shimon Elazar, I'm saying, Roy Lassus Menad Dorvan Kotan. Because you could use it to make a tiny little goad. You could use it to make a little goad for an ox. You have, when you want an ox to be plowing or to do some other kind of work, the farmer will have a stick. The farmer will have a stick, which at the end of it, you have a sharp piece of metal where you use it to poke the animal to get it to go in this direction or that direction. That kind of thing is called a dorvan. So even a tiny piece of metal can be used to make a point on the end of that stick to goad the animal to go where it's supposed to go. So therefore, a person is chayav for even that small amount. Okay. Since we're talking about small amounts of metal, the Gemara digresses a minute. Tonan Abonon, Ha'oimer Harei Olai Barzel. If a person makes a neder, I am going to donate iron to Hekdesh, to the Beit Hamikdash. So when he says iron, what's the minimum amount he has to bring? Acherim Oimer Lo Yifchus Me Ama Al Ama. So Acherim, which usually means your mayor, says he should not give less than an Ama by an Ama piece, unless he specified something smaller. Today's Chumash. Today we're in Parshas Nosai. You have today the gift that the Nesiyim brought to the Mishkan. Maybe that's what you're thinking of, but no. Yeah. So not less than an Amma by an Amma. So the question is, Lamai Chazya, what would you use a piece an Amma for an Amma by an Amma for in the Beit Mikdash? They would use it for the Kalya Olev, which is the Rashi explains. On the roof of the Beit Mikdash, they had pieces of iron, an amma by an amma, with sharp edges and nails all around. Yes, and the purpose was that to keep birds from poaching on there or in other places, Rashi and other Rishonim explain it's not just to keep birds from poaching there, but to keep them from defecating there, to keep them from throwing tumma over there. Like you have ravens, an oyrov is a raven. They eat carcasses, so they might be carrying around a piece of a carcass and then drop it off over there, and then you have tumma in the business. So to prevent that kind of thing, they had a kalya oyrov. There's a few different explanations among the Rishonim how exactly Rashi gives over here. One explanation of how the Kalya Odev was constructed. There's a few other ones. It consisted of sharp plates all around the edges of the Heichel, or it consisted of, or there's another explanation that Rishonim give that it was a scarecrow, whatever it is. It was made out of pieces of metal, an Amma by an Amma, and therefore that's the minimum piece that would have use in the Mishmikdash. Tosfos, by the way, brings an interesting side point over here, that the Aruch says that they did not have a Kalya Oriv in the first Beit Mikdash, because the Kedusha of the first Beit Mikdash was so great that birds weren't going to poach on there in the first place. Only the second Beit Mikdash, which had less of Kedusha, they found they needed a Kalya Oriv. Tosfos says that no, because we see from a Gemara in Moed Katan that says that they did. And Tosfos over there, actually, there's a Tosfos elsewhere in yet another Gemara in Erchin, where it talks about these dinim also, which explains that what it is there was originally Shlomo built the Beis Mikdash with a Kalya Oriv. Then when he realized they don't need it, then he took it off. As opposed to the second Beis Mikdash, they had it there the whole time. There's a fascinating explanation from Rabbi Yonatan Eidershit in Yaris Dvash, where he says, what's a deeper idea behind this? Why, according to this, why would Shlomo build the Mishkan for the Kalya Oriv and then removed it? If he says like this, Bechlal, we know that iron was not supposed to be used in the Mishkan because iron is used for weapons of war. It belongs to Esav. It doesn't belong in our Beit Mikdash. But when the Beit Mikdash was first built, it shouldn't have had to be destroyed. If the Jewish people had always kept to what they're supposed to be doing, the Beit Mikdash never would have been destroyed. So therefore, Shlomo at first figured there's no problem putting iron in the Beit Mikdash. Iron belongs to Esav. Fine, doesn't matter. Esav is never going to have any control over the Beit Mikdash. But then when he realized that they're not on the level that they should be on, and he himself married Baskaray and so forth, and things started to deteriorate, then he realized better let's not have iron in the Beit Mikdash, and so he removed it. So that's what it is.
Does that mean that this temple is going to have iron?
According to that, it sounds like it. Maybe Rav Yonatan brings over there. I don't know. Rabbi Yonason brings over there also that you have a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that mentions the preparations that David made to build the Beit Hamikdash, and it says among the things he collected is iron. So you have the same question. What do you mean iron if there's not supposed to be iron? Same thing. David himself thought he's going to build the Beit Hamikdash, and we know that Chazal tell us that if he had built it, it never would have been destroyed, because David is one of those people where he had the unique quality where everything that he did lasts forever. And therefore, there could have been iron in the Beit Hamikdash, and there wouldn't have been a problem. But since, in the event, he didn't build it, Shlomo did, then that's different. Yes, I guess the pashtus that means that in the third Beit Hamikdash, there could be iron. I don't know. I don't know if Rabbi Yonason talks further about that. Okay. Anyway. So that's the point then. So a piece of iron, an amma by an amma, is useful for the kalya odor. The ikad, only a different version of the braisa goes, achedim omen lo yifchit mikalya odor. The first version of the braisa was that it said he shouldn't give less than an amma by an amma, and Rabbi Yosef had to explain that that's used for the kalya odor. The second version is the other way around. They clearly say it's for the kalya odor, but that doesn't give us a size, the kama, and then what's the size? Omen Rabbi Yosef amma al amma. So it amounts to the same thing, but in other words, according to the different versions, you have one version has the size and the braisa, but not the purpose, and the other one has the purpose, but not the size. Since we're talking about that, let's talk about some other kinds of metals that a person might donate to the Beit Hamikdash. Nechoshes, if a person says, I want to donate copper to the Beit Hamikdash, and he doesn't say how much, lo yichos mi ma kesef. He shouldn't be giving less than a ma of silver. So the ma itself is a silver coin, but it means Rashi says an amount of copper equal to the value of a silver ma is the amount that he should be giving. Okay, Tanya Rabbi Eliezer, I remember we learned in a Brisa, Rabbi Eliezer says a different amount. Lo yichus mitzinurak tanash on the choshes. What he should give is not less than the size of the amount of copper that can be used to make a small fork made out of copper. So my Tazia, what would they use a small fork like that in the Mishnah? I'm going to buy a shemachapet advice up fillers. They would use that to cut off the burnt ends of the wicks. Nowadays, wicks are self-trimming, and you have, as the wick burns, then the burnt part falls off on its own, and it continues burning cleanly. The wicks they had in those days weren't like that. You'd have to trim them every so often. And therefore, they'd use small forks for that purpose. Or mekanchen aneris, they would also use them to wipe out the remaining ashes and whatnot from the lamps. So therefore, so that's a useful thing in the business session. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said that if you have the rotted away remnants of Sfarim or of the coverings of the Sfarim, where we said worms ate them and you have the rotted remnants that they left, then even a small amount the person is chayav for carrying because you're supposed to put them in Gneza. So Amar of Yehuda, so the Yehuda wants us to know what Mekek is. Mekek is Sifri, the Mekek is meaning the worms that attack Sfarim, so we mean something like bookworms or silverfish or whatever. Tochach the Shiroi, also the type of worm that affects silk clothing, some other kind of worm that eats silk. The Ilad Indi, and the kind of worms that you find in grapes. Oped Te'eni, and the insects or worms or whatever that you find in figs. Vahadurimoni, and the one that you find, the ha, which is each one has its own kind of name, that you find in pomegranates. So they're all different kinds of worms or insects or whatever, but each of them has a separate name. Kulu Sakanta, all of them are dangerous for someone who eats them. Now, of course, a person would be high, it would be also to eat them anyway, because you're not allowed to eat worms. The truth is, technically, if after the fruit is detached from the tree, if worms start growing in it and they never actually came out of the fruit, technically you actually are allowed to eat them, the Gemara tells us in Poland. But nevertheless, the beholder wants you to know that you can't because they're dangerous. So the Gemara gives an example. Ahu Talmid to have a Yosef Kameh Rabbi Yechanan. There was a Talmid sitting in front of Rabbi Yechanan as a Talmid, learning Torah. Have a ka'ochel to Eni. He was eating figs as he's sitting there. All of a sudden, Amalei Rebbe Koitzin Yesh V'Kaidin. All of a sudden, he calls out, Rebbe, there are thorns in the figs. Amalei, so Rabbi Yechanan says, I see what happened over here. Kapla Peh Levein. The Peh has killed him, meaning those aren't thorns. That's the Peh. That's the Peh worm. That's the Peh insect that was in these dates, which now is very dangerous to you. That's what you're feeling. And it was basically the poor guy passed away from it. Ashes Kaplay killed him, so yeah. I saw an interesting vort on it in some Breslover Sefer that he wants to say that the Talmud wanted to be misakin the Chet Tadas. on his own level. There's an opinion that the Eitz HaDaas was a fig tree. You have a half a dozen different opinions of Chachamim, of Chazal, what the tree was. One that was a fig tree, but he wasn't on the level to do it properly, and therefore he ended up dying in the attempt. The worm of Klippa that was in there ended up overpowering him. All right, the Mishnah says, "Hamoitzi kupa sarochlin." So now we're done talking about. Well, we're not done. Actually, the Mishnah is going to continue with more shiurim of things. But since we mentioned various kinds of spices and things, so the Mishnah says hamotzi kupa sarochlin. If a person carries out on Shabbos a basket that spice peddlers use. Now, what they do is they're selling spices and fragrances or whatever is a better translation for women to use for makeup. What they have is they have a big basket, and then in the basket they have small compartments for the individual kinds of fragrances. So suppose a person carries out that whole basket on Shabbos, alpha pisha yesh b'minin harbei, even if there are many different kinds of fragrances in it, ein chayv, ala chatas achas, he's only chayv, one chatas, because it was all one act of hotzah. Tosfos says that actually what it means is, even if, let's say, for example, so he carried out the whole basket, not knowing that it was Shabbos, or not knowing it was Malacha or whatever, later on he found out, there was a certain amount of this spice in it, which I should be chayav for, later on he finds out there was a certain amount of this spice, you would think maybe that makes a separation. No, the fact is that it was all one keli, it was all one hissa, therefore only one, therefore only one chayav. Okay, continues the Mishnah. If a person carries out on Shabbos garden seeds that used for planting, pachas mikigregeris, then a person is chayev for carrying less than a gregeris. Now, usually food, a person is chayev only if it's a full gregeris, but here you're going to be using it for planting, so therefore you can be chayev for less than a gregeris, because that's already significant enough that a person would carry out a smaller amount of that in order to plant. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says he's chayv, he carries five things. Because we learned earlier in the parak that you can have a small plot of land in your garden where you can plant five different kinds of plants in it, four on the four sides and one in the middle, as we went through all the geometry of it in the shiur on Shabbos. So five is considered significant enough. A person might take out five seeds to plant. So we can plant a whole plot with just those five seeds. But zera kishurin shnayim, but certain seeds is a smaller amount. Seeds of kishurin, which are cucumbers, then a person is chayav for only two of those, because two of them is enough that a person might plant. You're not going to need that for five of them, or almost a gregeris. Zera dilurin shnayim, the same way if it's seeds of pumpkins, also is chayav for only two. And zera pulamitri shnayim, also if it's seeds of pulamitri, Egyptian beans, which is some kind of beans, then also two of them is chayv, because all of those are important plants. All of those are choshuv, and therefore two seeds is enough to be mechayv. As opposed to when it comes to other kinds of plants, then you need a larger amount in order to be mechayv. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Chog of chay tahor. When it comes to a live kosher locust, if a person carries that out, kosherhu, then he's chayv no matter how small it is. Because you can keep it around for a kid to use as a pet, to have as a pet, as a plaything. So therefore, even a small one would be useful for that. If the locust is dead, it's gregeris, then it's a gregeris, like any other food, because you have certain kinds of locusts of kosher. We know nowadays we don't eat them because we don't have a masorah on them. Only Yemenites eat them. But those who have a masorah on them, fine. It's like any other food, so gregeris. Locusts, by the way, don't require shchita. So even though it died on its own, you can still eat it. Fish are the same way. You don't shech fish, and you don't shech locust. Siporus kromim. Then when it comes to siporus kromim, which is either some of the Gemara gives a definition for it later on in Aramaic, but that doesn't really help us. Some of the Rishonim say that it's another kind of locust, which seems to be based on a Gemara in Chulin. The Baruch Tanura says that it's a kind of bird. Whatever it is, suppose living in the bird. Whatever it is, anyway, ben chaya ben mesa, whether it's alive or whether it's alive or whether it's dead, kosher. Then the person is chaya even if it's a tiny thing. Shemachin osa l'refuah, because they keep it around for refuah, as we will see in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda, in the Afamoti Chag of Chai Tomei Kosher, Rabbi Yehuda says not only a kosher live locust that we said because a kid could use it as a plaything, also a non-kosher live locust would be Chai of Kosher, for the same reason, because you keep it around as a plaything for a kid. As opposed to the Tanakama, he's going to say that you don't do that because the kid may eat it. And you can't give him a non-kosher locust to play with, which he might end up eating. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about that, as we'll see at the end of the Gemara. Why? Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Urimini, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that when it comes to seeds, you need almost a kugur gerah. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm going to say there are five of them, or with certain kinds of seeds, two of them, in order to be chayav. But we learned previously, zevo v'chol adak, that if a person carries out on Shabbos fertilizer, zevel is animal dung that's used for fertilizer, chol adak is fine sand, which is also useful for the same purpose, then the shear is, kedei lezabo kelach shel kruv divrei Rabbi Akiva, then Rabbi Akiva says he's chayv, says enough of it to fertilize a cabbage plant, v'chomim kedei lezabo kresha, v'chom say if there's enough to fertilize a leek plant, so only one plant, then you chayv, why over here do you need more than that? And the answer is similar to what we said before. I'm going to pop a hodizria, hodolizria. It's different whether the plant is already planted. Then once it's already planted, yeah, you'll bring out enough fertilizer to fertilize the one plant. But before it's planted, a person does not bother taking out one seed in order to plant to begin with, so therefore he can't be chayav for carrying only one seed. As opposed to once it's planted already, then he'll fertilize it. Okay. We said zerak yishurin. We said that if a person carries out cucumber seeds on Shabbos, then he's chayav for only two of them. A ton of rabbanon. Hamoisi garkinin. If a person carries out on Shabbos date pits, how many of them does he need in order to be chayav? So it depends. In lenatia, if they're the kind that you plant, you have certain kinds of date pits that are actually used for planting, and then you have other ones that are of low quality and you don't use them for planting, you use them for other purposes. So if they're the kind that are suitable to plant or in a place where they regularly plant them, then shtayim, that a person is chayav for two of them, like the various ones we mentioned in our Mishnah. In la'achila, if he's taking them out in order for an animal to eat, then the amount would be kimloi pi chazir, then the amount would be enough to fill up the mouth of a pig. Now, Tosfos says Jews are not allowed to raise pigs, but we're talking about, let's say, for example, that he keeps it around in order to sell it to a goy. No, but pasha doesn't mean anywhere. You're not allowed to, but let's say, for example, he wants to give it or sell it to a goy. So then, how many date pits does it take to fill up a chazir's mouth? One date pit. I don't know. I've never measured the inside of a pig's mouth, but I guess I don't know. In lahastik, if you're carrying out these date pits in order to use them for firewood, then it's like other firewood could be the basho, base akala. Then it's like we said at the beginning, the amount in order to cook an easy egg. The chicken egg. In l'cheshbon, what if you're taking out the pits in order to use them for counting? So like you have, for example, you know, you're counting out money or whatever, and you set aside some pits. Like every time you count it out 10, you'll put aside one pit so you don't lose track. So then, shtayim, so then you're chayav for taking out two of them. Acherim and chomish, acherim, say five, because up to four, you're not gonna get so mixed up that you need something else to keep count. Once you have, once you reach five groups of 10, let's say, then already you're likely to lose track. How many you have, then you need seeds on the side of it there to keep track. Okay. Turn it up, bottom. We learn another bright. Hamoti shnei nimin miznava sosim miznava parah. If a person carries out on Shabbat two hairs from the tail of a horse or from the tail of a cow, chayev, then a person will be chayev. Shemafni noisim l'nishvin, because two hairs like that, people set aside in order to use them, to make bird traps. Those hairs are strong enough that you can make like a loop out of them to trap a bird in. Miksha shochazir achas. If a person carries out on Shabbos one bristle from a chazir, you have the bristles that grow along the chazir's back. So then a person is chayav for carrying one of them. It means a tough hair. It looks like a hair, but it's actually strong and it's sharp and strong. It's like a porcupine. Think of like the quills of a porcupine. It's a little bit like that. So then the person is chayav for carrying one of them because a shoemaker can use them. A shoemaker needs something strong to be able to penetrate through the leather with his thread. So he won't use a regular needle. He could use a mixer shochazir for that purpose. Third day dekel shtayim. If a person carries out on Shabbat third day dekel, which is peeled leaves of from a palm tree. Then shtayim, and a person is chayav for two of them because you can make shnei batei nirin out of them. You can make the first two parts when you make you use these let's say make baskets or whatever. So you use two of them to make the beginning framework of the basket. So then two of them is enough to be chayav. Tore deko achas. On the other hand, if a person carries out the tore deko, which is the vine or something that so it's a kind of vine or something that grows around the palm tree, then a person is chayav only for one. Rashi says, I don't know what you would use that for. The oruch brings that you could use it if you have, let's say, for example, you have a pumpkin shell that you want to use as a, drinking container. So you would sew around the end of it using the sieve. You would put the sieve in and out of the around the edges of it in order to keep the edge strong so that you can drink out of it. So therefore, a person would be chayav for that. Okay. Then we said siporus kromim ben chayav ben mesa kolshu. If a person carries out on Shabbos siporus kromim, then he's chayav whether it's alive or dead, even if it's small. My siporus kromim, omrav palya biyori. That's what it's called in Aramaic, palya biyori. Again, most of the Rishonim say that it's some kind of grasshopper, some kind of locust. The Baruch Inuna says that it's some kind of bird. Whatever it is. We said in the Mishnah that you use it for refuah. How do you use it? Amar Abaye, umeshtachach bedikla dechad navara. You find it living on palm trees, on young palm trees that have only one seed growing around it. Meaning, as the palm tree gets older, you have more and more of these vines or whatever that start growing around it that grow from the roots. But when the tree is young, then you only have one. So when the tree is young is when the Sikoris Kromim lives in it. But avdila lechochma, what they do is they use Siporis Kramim for a person who needs chokhmah, for a person who needs help opening up his heart and his brain in order to be able to learn. So what do? Ochel le palgud yameh, you eat the right half of it. Palgud a smaller romi lava goofsa de nechosha, the remaining left side of the creature, you put into a copper tube. V'chosim lava shishin gushpanti, you seal up the tube with 60 kinds of seals. Previously, Rashi explained that on a similar Gemara that we had at the end of the sixth parak, that it doesn't literally mean 60, it just means many different kinds of seals, like you have wax and tar and this and that and whatever. V'toli le be'evra de smola, then he hangs it on his left arm, and the way to remember, the way to remember which arm you should be putting it on is, as the Pasuk says, the heart of the wise man is on his right side, the heart of the fool is on his left side. It means, in other words, that the wise man listens to his Yetzer Tov, which is on the right side of the heart, the fool listens to his Yetzer Hara, which is on the left side, but the point is it helps us remember that this person who's foolish and needs to develop some brain should be hanging this thing on his left side, on his left arm. Then the chakim kama deboy, the gomma kama deboy, then that helps him become smart and to be able to learn as much as he wants to. And then eventually the ochaloy the idach palga, then eventually he eats the other half of the Sephardis crumb. The eloy, and if he doesn't eat the other half, mi akla talmud, then it'll cause him to forget the learning and the chokhmah that he accomplished.
You have to finish the whole thing.
Mistama, also it means you have to hurry up because within a couple of days the thing is going to spoil, even if it's inside a sealed metal tube. If you leave it more than a couple of days, it's going to spoil, and it's not going to be edible. So it means, in other words, you have to hurry up and learn what he's going to learn real quick. Okay, what it means, I mean, obviously there must be some deeper meaning in this besides the simple meaning, but I haven't seen anybody specifically that explains what it means. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda im Aham Moitzi Chula. We said Rabbi Yehuda says also a person who carries out a non-kosher live locust on Shabbos is chayev because you can keep it for a kid to play with. So the Tanakama Sava Lois. The Tanakama says that no, a non-kosher locust, you're not chayev for carrying a small one on Shabbos. My time, a Juma Ochalei, because if you give it to a kid as a plaything, he may end up eating it. And you're not allowed to. Now, Rashi mentions, you have a machloikas, whether if you see a child eating treif or doing other averis, are you obligated to stop him, but you definitely can't give him the thing that's also in the first place. So the question is, in that case, why should you be allowed to give him a live one either? He might eat it while it's alive, and that's also a problem. We know that one time Rav Kahana was standing as a Talmud in front of Rav, he was passing a shushiva, which is a kind of kosher locust, in front of his mouth, and the locust was still alive.
Amale Shakle, and Rav tells him, take it away. You may not be trying to eat it, but don't put it over there looking as if you're about to eat it while it's alive. So people don't think that you're about to eat it. And then you're going to be over on the issue of don't make yourself disgusting. So it's true. Once it's dead, then fine. It's food. You can eat it, but don't do that while it's alive, putting it anywhere near your mouth. So we see, in other words, you're not allowed to eat it while it's alive. So if you give a live one to a kid also, he may eat it. So why is that allowed? Now, the answer is eligible. So we're not concerned. We're not concerned he's going to eat it while it's alive. As long as it's alive, he's going to play with it. But the Tanakhama is concerned if it's a non-kosher locust, if it dies, then the kid may eat it. And then you have a problem. Now, okay, it's not Baal Tashaktu, but it's a non-kosher locust. And you gave him something non-kosher to eat. But of Yehuda, what is your Yehuda answer to that? He says, if this locust dies, the kid is not going to eat it. The kid is going to make a whole funeral for it. He's going to be sad that his little pet died. He's going to make a whole funeral and a whole hesped for it and whatever. He's not going to go and eat it. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about the possibility that he may eat it after it's dead, whereas the Tanakhama is. So that's the thing. If it's a kosher one, there's definitely no problem in giving it to him to play with, because if it's alive, then Godel will play with it. Once it's dead, okay, if he buries it, fine, no problem. Even if he eats it, no problem. It was kosher. But if it was a non-kosher one, the Tanakhama would say you're not allowed to give it to a kid to play with in the first place, because after it's dead, he may eat it. And Rabbi Yehuda says you can give him a non-kosher one also, because if it's dead, he's not going to eat it. He's going to make a hesed for it. Okay. Hadron Allah Omer Rabbi Akiva.
Everyone.
Yeah. So, given the recent information, someone might be getting this minish.